Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again, boys and girls, to another edition of the FootballDiehards.com podcast. I'm Skip Lacombe, and joining me, as always, is senior editor with FootballDiehards.com, Bob Harris. Bob, how's it going? You there, Bob? All right, we're trying to hook up with Bob here on the FootballDiehards.com podcast. So we can get back with Bob, though, let's go ahead and bring in our resident draftnik, Joe A. Bear. Lots of stuff heading in, going into the draft. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, Skip. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Looks like we lost Bob. We'll try to get him back on in a later portion of the show. But let's just go ahead and start with you. What are you looking at going into the draft coming up? We're, what, 14 days out now?
Yeah, we're pretty darn close, and it's time for everybody's wishes and hopes and dreams as far as the young college kids coming out to become reality. So it's getting pretty interesting, and there's still plenty of trade possibilities as we get closer to the draft.
Absolutely. Lots of those possibilities coming up. Today we want to take a more in-depth look at some of the running back class entering the draft this year. Are the top contenders who have been pretty much the entire time still at the top, or anybody else making some waves right now?
I think so. As I've gone through, I've kind of broken down the running backs into what roles I see them fulfilling when they make it to the pros. And initially we had talked about maybe four running backs at the top of the draft, that being Knowshon Moreno, Chris Wells, Donald Brown, and LeSean McCoy. But I think a fifth one is maybe sneaking in as a possible every down type of back.
Oh, who's that?
That's going to be Andre Brown out of North Carolina State. He's another big, powerful back. He has a nice pad level, very strong in his legs, and he's able to help in the passing game as well. So the reason he's not been so well heard of is, A, he played North Carolina State, and B, he's had some injury history here, so it's kind of kept him back from performing as to his highest possibilities. But, I mean, the guy's 6 foot, 224. He's got nice speed, nice size, nice power, and he projects, to me at least, as an every-down type of back, and that means he might be somebody of interest come fantasy football drafts later on during the year.
So what's different come now? Why is his name starting to come up now as opposed to a month ago?
I think really it's just a matter of people going back and taking the time to take a look at, junior tape and sophomore tape and to try and get a glimpse as to what the guy really had before he got beat up with injury. Left foot in particular is what we're talking about here. But I think if he lands in the right type of system, as really most college players, you got to be able to play to their strengths. So if he, possibly lands in a zone blocking type of scheme offense, then I think he has a chance. And considering, if the team that drafts him actually needs somebody to step up and be a primary back, especially soon, then that gives this guy the opportunity to perhaps step up and become productive.
So where do you see him maybe ending up in the rotation? Maybe number five of the three? Where do you think he may end up going in draft?
Yeah, out of this top level group, I think he would probably be the fifth one off the board, unless somebody decided that LeSean McCoy maybe wasn't everything he could possibly be. The person I tie him most closely to is probably somebody like a Reggie Bush, because he's so quick and does so much of his work outside the tackles. But I think some teams are going to decide that maybe he is strong enough inside the tackles and can use him better. So it's really going to be a sort of what player matches what system. But I think overall, McCoy probably deserves to be drafted before Brown.
Okay, looking else down the list, we got Knowshon Moreno, who a lot of people have been talking about this whole year. How's he going heading into the draft in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I think it's him or Chris Wells as first pick in the draft as far as the running backs. And
Beanie Wells, best nickname in football, too.
It's a great nickname, isn't it? And, again, it's going to be based on system where they match up. I mean, Moreno and Wells have different types of strengths, with Wells being a little bit stronger between the tackles and Moreno being maybe a little bit more explosive outside. So it's going to be, who fits the system best to see who goes first. And there's really neither one of these players is the obvious choice to go first. So it's going to be a battle. And with so few teams really having, as a major need for them, a running back, these running backs, even though they're fairly good, they're not great as prospects go. But they're just not going to be top 10 picks because there's no need up there unless Cincinnati does something crazy and goes running back way up at number six, but that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So between Knowshon Moreno and Chris Wells, they're pretty much a coin toss at this point. What specific teams do you think could use a player like either Wells or Moreno?
Yeah, as I've done gone through several mock drafts, I mean, the teams in the first round that say, well, maybe I should grab a running back, would be the obvious teams are Philadelphia, looking to get some depth for Brian Risbrook, and then way down at number 31 sits Arizona, who does not have a reasonable running back to go with right now. So they're probably the team in the first round that most needs a running back, but other teams that could sneak in there is, you know, a dark horse for a running back choice in the first round would be a team like the Saints. I mean, they've got Reggie Bush, but they've got rid of Deuce McAllister, but they may decide that they want to go with a power back and grab somebody like a Beanie Wells in the first round, who would be a pretty good fit on that team. I think really they have so many more needs on defense that doesn't make sense, but you know, sometimes these picks, they just don't make sense to me, so you never know.
Yeah, well, a lot of times those people have a whole lot of tapes they've been looking at, have tons of film they've been looking at, and know more information than either you and I probably ever will about some of these guys, right?
Oh, that's totally true. I mean, they have coaches taped. They have obviously the ability to access, I mean, the players' position coaches and head coaches and teammates and friends of friends of friends. And nowadays in the NFL, people do their homework, and it's very rare that they don't know pretty much everything they need to know about a player before they call his name on draft day.
Yeah, plus, Joe, I don't know about you, but I wasn't at the combine this year.
Exactly. And, I mean, granted, it's televised, but it's not like every part of it's televised, but all 32 teams have representatives at the combine, and they're pulling information that you or I would probably think is silly, and they're debating, you know, things like the span between a player's thumb and pinky is being a divider at some point. It's just crazy. At times they, you know, overanalyze, in my opinion, and kind of lose sight of, okay, we're playing football here. We're not, you know, looking at measurements as the most important thing. But some teams get into the measurements and really want those height, weight, speed guys, and other teams are looking at the tape and saying, this guy can play football. I don't care what he runs. He can play.
Yeah. Do you think that overanalysis might actually hurt some of these players? Whereas, I don't know, maybe like a James Davis from Clemson or something, who not a lot of people have talked about. Maybe he doesn't have the proper measurements from his thumb to his pinky, or his calves are slightly too small. Do you think that maybe sometimes teams are looking into too many of those little small little factors and not taking a look at a player as a whole and really how they can benefit their system?
Yeah, I think some teams do, and really just comes down to, you know, Like everything else, I mean, it's people making these decisions, and you or I might lock on the football in maybe particular areas, and somebody else might say, well, you know what, we can teach this guy to play football, but we can't make him taller, we can't make him faster, so let's go get those tall and fast guys, and we'll coach him up. And so, you know, I think some teams are a little bit more successful than others at making that happen, and, you know, there's some validity to getting a good athlete and trying to make a football player out of them, but, you know, these guys are, for the most part, 21, 22 years old coming out, and they should be playing some pretty good football at this point, and in my mind, be a lot less potential and a lot more performance out there on the field.
Yes, indeed. Well, Joe, I do want to go in a little more depth with some of these running backs, but let's go ahead and try to bring Bob in here real quickly and talk about some of the news and notes that have been going on in the past week. Bob, are you there?
I am here. A little trouble getting in, but we're all better now.
All better now. Very good. How was your week?
It was great, you know, and I was listening to you guys talk, and I was thinking about some of the famous measurables that we've had, some of the guys with, you know, those, I think of David LaFleur, the Cowboys tight end from LSU, whose hand measured 11 inches from the heel of the hand to the end of the middle finger.
Wow.
And, you know, those huge hands served him well. Don't introduce your girlfriend. The handshake might be devastating to all involved. But he wasn't a heck of a player, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so it looks like a lot of times those little those measurements, some guy may have really big hands, but apparently his feet are really bad. So I don't know, maybe sometimes
too,
teams.
Hey, you talk to little guys, you know, and they're always unhappy that, you know, about the way the draft works out. And you know, there's always guys that slip through, and you know we can think of some other ones, but right off the top of the bat, Maurice Jones-Drew comes to mind. I mean, you know, a lot of players went ahead of him who were bigger, faster, you know, had all the measurables. But, you know, that's part of football, is finding these guys, the Steve Slayton, who, you know, falls down to the bottom of the draft because people just don't have confidence in what he did in his college, don't have confidence in his measurables, his size. Maybe the speed wasn't quite what they expected. But, you know, some of these guys are still football players, and that still counts for something.
Yeah, and heck, we'll take a look at a player like Tom Brady or two. How many players were drafted before Tom Brady the year he went out? Look at the career he's made for himself.
Yeah, and Matt Castle going down the same path, and who knows, maybe an unknown, as a yet unnamed Bronco will do the same.
Perhaps, perhaps. Well, I want to go ahead and go into some of the stories of the week. Terrell Owens, of course, is back in the news. Looks like he's going to finally start working out again. Plus, he came out and thought it's a little unfair how he's being so singled out as not making the voluntary camps. Is this media circus ever going to end?
No, it never will end. I mean, well, you know, he earned it, and now he has it, and I hope he's enjoying it. I hope all his teammates enjoy it. And you know, I don't see it. You know, I don't see the intensity turning down now that he's in Buffalo, smaller media market. But he, you know, he's still on that national stage. Everything he does is going to be magnified. Every whisper, every gesture on the sidelines, every word he has with his quarterback, every look he exchanges with a coach. I mean, there, you know, the Bills are going to be on plenty of television for the Bills this year again. But you know, you could think that Terrell Owens is going to play a role in that, and he is going to be in the forefront. He will be the spotlight because that's what he does.
Well, and the biggest thing that annoys me about Owens coming out and saying what he said earlier is that, I mean, he's brought all this attention upon himself. He loves being in the limelight. He just only wants people to talk positive about him. I mean, when you take your bench press and are doing bench presses in your driveway, you clearly want the media to come talk about you, and you're going to have to take the good with the bad.
You know, and I think, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, he's learned that there are certain elements of the media. There are apologists. There are people on T.O.'s bandwagon who will always be on his bandwagon. I mean, I can, you know, I remember Deion Sanders, suggesting that Terrell Owens was the beacon of truth in a world where the police and all the first responders on a reported attempted suicide were the big fat liars. And, I mean, there's always going to be people out there giving his side of the story. He can always go sit down with Stephen A. Smith and get a very friendly interview on the same network where he just called a veteran reporter, Ed Werder, a big fat liar, you know, in front of God and everybody. So T.O. gets both sides of that, and I mean, I think his feigned indignity at the unfairness of it all, you know, it's all a little more than I can bear. But you know what? The guy can still play a little football, and I'm hoping as much of the focus as we can muster will go on that aspect of it, but it won't. Hope is cheap. I'll indulge myself.
Yeah, of course not. Another interesting story coming out just a little while ago is apparently Dante Culpepper has been working pretty hard in this offseason getting himself back into shape. Is he possibly trying to go ahead and make a run for the job, assuming, of course, they don't pick up a Matt Stafford in the draft?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's definitely the front runner, assuming they don't pick somebody up. And he has come in. I mean, I think, he, you know, when he showed up last year, he was close to 3 bills. Kind of came in the middle of the season, yanked out of retirement, had officially announced his retirement, and started some games. But he obviously was not as mobile as you'd like him to be, or quite as tuned up as you'd like him to be. Right now, he's supposedly down around 260, and that's kind of where he played at Minnesota. He is a big guy, but a little more mobility, and who knows if they don't bring in a rookie, and you know that seems to be one of the directions they could be leaning in Detroit. I think, you know, if they don't bring that rookie in, Culpepper looks like he'll be glad to me.
Joe, where do you...
David Garrard also is doing a similar thing, too. I don't know if you noticed. He showed up about 20 pounds lighter and, you know, basically said, hey, you know, Jack Del Rio said if I was 20 pounds lighter, I'd be an all-pro. Well, he's taking the first step, you know, and all, you like to see that in some of these guys that maybe had felt pretty comfortable with where they were. Maybe they feel a little more, you know, it's good to see them respond to the possibility of competition, the rumors of competition, or coming off a poor season in Garrard's case. So, hey, these guys are getting the message and getting busy.
Well, absolutely. It's always good to see players improving their game and getting to that higher level and getting to a higher level of play within their own game. Drew, I wanted to ask you, though, what do you think the likelihood is at this point of the Lions picking up a first-round quarterback and having Culpepper maybe have to sit the bench?
I think the Lions have been pretty quiet about what they're intending to do here. I think it certainly comes down to offensive tackle or quarterback. But to be honest, even if they pull quarterback with the number one pick, I think that player is going to sit for a while and learn, and I think there's a good chance Culpepper starts regardless of what the Lions do with that first choice.
There you go. Well, that should be interesting. But he has dropped about 20 pounds. He's getting a little more mobile. His teammates are saying he's looking good, in great shape, becoming a leader of the team, has a real good attitude. So he's certainly got his head on straight looking forward to the next season. Another player. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Skip.
Well, I was just going to move on. Do you have something else on Culpepper?
I just think, you know, and he, by the way, he's down closer to 40 pounds. So I just think, you know, a guy like that, a veteran guy, they brought in some help, you know, at receiver. They brought in a little more help at receiver than they had in the past. And obviously the offense is going to change some. The whole team is going to change some. But I do think, you know, a good, solid veteran in there. But, you know, you look back to last year and there was some, you know, there were some teams that, you know, with the new staffs and looking to make a new change, that when they did bring in their quarterback, you know, they kind of made the big swap out in, you know, Atlanta and Baltimore, and it worked out pretty well for them. So it wouldn't be totally surprising if a rookie came in, if Stafford came in, for example. But I think, you know, I'm with Joe. I think they're still up in the air. It could go tackle or it could go quarterback. And, you know, incoming quarterbacks, the overall history is not great. Last year was a little bit more of an aberration than what you should expect.
Well, we should be a lot closer to knowing what's going to happen here in about 2 weeks. Moving on, the Bills, Marshawn Lynch is going to be missing the first three games of the regular season. That after he was suspended without pay for violating the personal conduct policy. How much is that going to play into the start of the season?
We'll see. You know, there's still a chance he could appeal, and the commissioner does have, Commissioner Goodell has in the past, as recently as last year with Brandon Marshall, reduced that three-game suspension to a one-game suspension. I think either way, the Bills feel pretty good that Fred Jackson can get the job done. They're going to bring in another guy. There's talk out today that they may intensify their efforts to get Deshaun Foster. They had him in for a visit. And they looked at a number of veterans earlier. They looked at Fred Taylor would be one. And so, you know, I think they're prepared, and I think they knew it was coming. And they're hoping that, you know, Fred Jackson is going to be the guy. He's a little unhappy right now not showing up for workouts because he'd like a little better contract. But, you know, he's an exclusive rights free agent, so he doesn't have a lot of say in the matter. He will be there. He will play for the Bills, and he'll be the starter while Lynch is out. The real question is, how long is Lynch out? It's good to see Lynch is really, you know, he was proactive in this. He was the one who requested the meeting with the commissioner after his trouble earlier this year with the gun charge. He was the one, he, you know, showed a great deal of contrition from all accounts. He's really working hard in the community the last, you know, since this incident. He seems to be doing all the things you need to do to convince the commissioner to lighten that load on him, and I think he may well.
Very good, very good. Aside from that, Michael Vick now is back in prison in his home state. He's going to be finally getting out here over the next couple of months. So,
He'll be out to the halfway house May 21st, and I think 21st. You know that's going to be our big drama in June, July. Is he going to be allowed to come back? He'll have to meet with the commissioner. My guess is there won't be a big rush to get him back on the field, other than from his creditors. They will be the people most pushing for it. But Roger Goodell is not among those owed money. So, I go back to Mike Vick sitting there and telling the commissioner to his face that no, I'm not involved in any of this, right before it all became apparent that he was involved and he was subsequently convicted of the dogfighting. I think the commissioner is going to take a hardline approach. Could be an indefinite suspension. We've seen that with Chris Henry, you know, and then he came back after eight games. Or it could be a year. He could just sit him for the year and say, hey, well, you know, sit around and think about it, do your construction job, and come back. We'll talk next year. But that will be, you know, so far I have to say that all the off-season soap operas have come to pretty brisk conclusions much sooner than I expected. We can hope the same with Mike Vick once his work gets underway.
Then we'd have nothing to talk about, that we'd have to start talking about Brett Favre again, and we don't want to go there.
You know what? We could actually do some analysis of some in-depth stuff, like what Joe Hebert does with the rookies. I love that stuff.
Absolutely. Also, it was announced earlier that the official schedules for the 2009 season will be released April 14th, so we'll probably want to get into some analysis of that here after that comes out. Also, too, it looks like Fitzgerald's going to be on the cover of Madden 2009. Is that a smart move for him?
No, history says not. I'm not a great believer in curses, but if I was going to believe in a curse, it would be the Madden curse. The Campbell's Chunky Soup curse is up there too. But you know, if you look back over history, and they say he might be on with Troy Polamalu, they'll reveal the cover on April 24th. But you know, you look back over time, and you know, there's been guys who have gotten hurt. You got Vic, Sean Alexander, Donovan McNabb. Vince Young didn't fare well after he made it. Brett Favre, you know, the whole thing last year. You know, and you can trace that all the way back to Barry Sanders and Marshall Faulk and their cover seasons. It tends to be a bit of a bugaboo. We can hope that Fitzgerald is the one who snaps it. But again, hope is cheap.
Don't say snaps it right now after that. Be careful
right.
there.
Right.
well, very nice. I think we want to go ahead and get into a little bit more of the running back conversation. Anything I'm missing in the weekend, NFL?
You know, I think that's the big stuff. Everyone check back this weekend. I've got a notebook coming out that's going to go real in-depth on the Cutler, the big trade last week, you know, kind of give you the TikTok and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So check that out Sunday morning.
Be sure to check it out at footballdiehards.com. Bob Harris is a senior editor with footballdiehards.com. Now it's time to go back into some of the running backs. Now I want to do a little more in-depth discussion about some of these people who maybe have not had a whole bunch of time on ESPN talking or people talking about them. But some people like Donald Brown from UConn, 5'10", 210 pounds. Where do you think some of these guys are going to end up going?
Yeah, with Donald Brown, he's one of those top five running backs to me that's capable of being in there, you know, all three or four downs for a team. And so to me, that means he's probably going to go lower first or top of the second round, that type of area. He's got a really nice, small, compact build. He's 5'10", which isn't tiny, 210 pounds. Really nice balance, really nice vision. Very good in the hole. And knows how to use his blockers. And something that I think we've talked about before is when teams interviewed this guy, he just came across like, you know, the guy you want your daughter to marry. He's just a perfect interview. He's just a great guy, intelligent, extremely likable. He's going to be wonderful for whatever team finds him. And I think his talent is pretty close to that, too. And he should find himself in a nice position as far as come draft day. Like I said, early second round is probably the best bet. But, yeah, I mean, he's certainly a favorite of somebody say like Mike Mayock is really on top of this guy as being maybe even the second best running back in this draft.
And it's certainly shown over the past couple of years that a player who is good in front of a camera is I don't want to say as important to a team as a player who is good on the field, but certainly plays into what kind of a dynamic they're going to be in as part of a team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, take for instance, I mean, the discussion we just had with Bob, we're talking about players who are in trouble and causing issues for their team and for the league and certainly outside of that for their family and neighborhood. And, you know, teams don't need those distractions. They're spending millions of dollars on these players. And, you know, if at all possible, they certainly want to find somebody who's got the character, who's going to be able to handle, you know, the media, be able to handle themselves out in the private world and just be able to take care of things and get the job done and be a professional. And that's what they want. I think to us on the outside world, it's not asking a lot to have these guys do that. But, you know, for the most part, these guys have been idolized basically probably since before high school days. And, you know, they've been treated, you know, as if they were kings, you know, all the way to this point in their lives. And now you throw a lot of money at them, and they just don't know how to handle it. And some of them just make the wrong decisions. And it you know, it seems laughable that would be a difficult situation in life to suddenly find yourself rich and famous, but apparently it is, and we've seen that, you know, and anywhere from Hollywood to the NFL.
Yeah, very good, and you certainly do see that a lot. Some of the players who really haven't been talked about too much, Mike Goodson, a 6 foot tall out of Texas A&M, 208 pounds, really quick guy. Who do you think he might be able to fit in with?
Yeah, Goodson's a nice one. I mean, when I broke down my running backs, one of the sections I have is for speed backs and third down backs, and that's right where Goodson fits. He's got tremendous speed and agility. He's very quick. He's 6'2", 208, so even with that speed and agility, he's not tiny. He's good. He's good. A good receiver. He's good in the open field. I mean, where he's going to get dinged here is he's had some major issues getting along with his coaches over there at Texas A&M, and I think, you know, that's not the best thing you want on your resume when teams are looking to add, as we just talked about, you know, quality players and quality people if possible, and so that could hurt him come draft day, but on pure football ability, as far as what the kid can do, he looks very dangerous, and he'd be a great third down back for somebody.
Yeah, someone else with some real explosive speed is Jeremiah Johnson out of Oregon at 5'9", 209, has really, really been impressive with speed.
Yeah, he's somebody that probably a lot of people out there don't know because he's playing out there on the West Coast in Oregon, and, you know, unless you're USC, for the most part over here where I am on the East Coast of the world, we just don't even know about those guys. But,
uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, he's very fast. He's got a great sense of balance. He's strong enough to run through arm tackles. He's a good receiver. He's another of these players who's going to, I think, profile as a third down type of back, and he's going to be filling that type of role. And, you know, in fact, you know, if he had injured his ACL back in 2007, we might not know who Jonathan Stewart was because he had the starting role in front of Stewart before that injury. So the guy's got some talent and could be even more than just a third down back, possibly.
Yeah, one of the bigger guys coming out of this draft class is Rashad Jennings, 6'1", 231 out of Liberty.
Yep, that falls into my section on power backs. He's one of two there, along with Sean Green out of Iowa. And, yeah, Jennings, because he's small school out of Liberty, like you said, not extremely well known, but he's been talked about a lot here in most of the mock drafts I've seen and people analyzing running backs. He's fallen in that probably 6 to 8 range overall of where he's going to get drafted. And to me, he seems like a perfect fit to a team like Houston who needs somebody to balance off Steve Slayton, go ahead and get some tough yards for him. I think he'd fit right in that offense. To me, that's the most natural fit, and we'll see if it happens. I mean, it's awfully hard to project one player to land, you know, in the third round on a specific team, but that matchup to me just, you know, seems like it's heaven made.
A player who a lot of people may have saw on SportsCenter one time after he proposed to his girlfriend after victory over Oklahoma is Ian Johnson out of Boise State, 5'11", 212. Where do you think he's going to really go around?
Yep. Again, he's another one of those third down backs, pass receiving kind of guys. He's got a lot of speed. He's pretty good at attacking the line of scrimmage, and he will break some tackles. What he's got going against him is a medical history that's really kind of trash his last couple of years here. The other thing that's going to be a strength for him is he's very good on special teams, and he'll land on a roster just on that. And so I think a team that needs a little bit of running back depth and in particular needs a little bit of special teams help, he'll be a nice fit.
Very good. Any of the other backs out there who should be making some headlines who aren't right now?
I've got three backs listed here who are probably going to end up to start their careers as backups. They're not ready to be primary backs, and they're not just pure power or speed backs. And I think all of them are a little bit interesting, really. One of them is James Davis, who's coming out of Clemson, who, if he had come out last year, probably would have gone in the second round, but he decided to stay for his senior year when all those other juniors declared last year. And
well, that really hurt him. He didn't really have a whole lot of people around him during his senior year.
Exactly. So if those who are looking at just his numbers will see he had a fairly poor year, really, but the talent is still there. And like you said, he was surrounded by some very poor talent. So he'll be interesting to see where he goes. Another one is Arian Foster out of Tennessee. He's 6'1", 226, so he's built like a premium back like you'd want. Solid build, a lot of quickness. He does have problems with fumbles and really could use a little bit more power in his body. So I think if you give him some time and develop him, get him working out with an NFL trainer, I think he could possibly step up from even being a backup. So he's a really intriguing back out there. And the final one I have out there is Javon Rainer, who's coming out of Michigan State. He's a bit smallish on height, 5'9", but he's a solid 205. He knows how to use his blockers. He's got a little bit of burst. He's a good blocker, and that always helps. That's probably the most overlooked skill that these running backs need to play in the NFL is the ability to pick up their, you know, a blitz. And he's a player who's probably going to start out as a backup somewhere, but, you know, it's possible he could develop into more. And those three guys are all very intriguing, and landing on the right team in the right situation, they could see their fortunes change here in a couple of years.
Yeah, and Ringer was certainly utilized last year by Michigan State. Looks like he had 418 touches in 2008, so certainly familiar with having that ball in his hand.
Exactly. That was a bit insane, and certainly is, you know, he put up huge numbers there, but you know, over the last several games, as you might expect, his performance started to fade. He started to get shut down three out of the last four games, and you know, I can't fault the guy on those kind of touches. And in the NFL, he's probably going to see, you know, maybe 4 to 6, maybe 8 touches in a game. And so he's not going to have that same problem. So I think he'll be all right, at least to start off.
All right, so if it's your money on the line, who are the top three backs this year in order?
Yep, okay.
in order, we need to have it.
Right. Well, before we know where they land, I think my order right now is I still like Knowshon Moreno at the top. He's got one less question mark than Chris being Wells, so I'll make him first, and that question mark being Wells being dinged up with injuries. Mm-hmm. I'll put Wells at number two. He certainly has the potential to be number one, and it really is a coin flip there. And right now my number three is Donald Brown. I really like everything he brings, and, you know, he's just got that awesome character to go with it. He's got plenty of talent, and I got them pretty comfortably right now as one, two, and three.
Very good. Well, we are getting really close to the draft. I'm sure as we come into probably next week or maybe the following, we're probably going to do one more mock draft with you to go ahead and see what your final matchup's going to be. But this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Thank you so much once again, Joe, for joining me on it. And we'll hope to talk to you next week.
Thanks, Skip. Take care.
Very good. Be sure to check out the website, www.footballdiehards.com. Until next week, I'm Skip Lacombe.